Radio Prague News.
The average salary in the Czech Republic rose by 1.4% year-on-year in the third quarter, though consumer prices rose by 3.3%. The Chamber of Deputies has voted to lift the immunity of the Civic Democrats Roman Pekárek, and the consumption of marijuana among young Czechs fell last year, according to a new report. According to official figures released on Tuesday, the average salary in the Czech Republic rose to 24,514 crowns in the third quarter of this year, representing an increase of 1.4% year-on-year. However, given that consumer prices grew by 3.3% in the third quarter, wage earners were worse off than in the same period in 2011. Analysts said they hadn't expected such a marked fall in real incomes. The Chamber of Deputies voted on Tuesday to lift the parliamentary immunity of the Civic Democrats Roman Pekárek. Mr. Pekárek had been in the process of appealing a 6-year jail term for corruption when he gained a seat in the Chamber of Deputies due to the resignation of a party colleague. Some 158 of 161 deputies present in the lower house voted to strip him of his immunity, meaning that his appeal proceeding can now go ahead. Mr. Pekárek says he's innocent and has rejected calls for him to quit the lower house. The consumption of marijuana among young Czechs fell last year, according to a new report by the National Monitoring Centre for Drugs and Drug Addiction. Some 16.1% of those in the 16 to 34 age category told researchers they had consumed the country's most commonly used illicit drug in 2011, down from 20% the year before. At the same time, the number of what are referred to as problem drug users grew slightly, the report found. The Czech Defence Minister Alexander Vondra says Sweden has offered the Czech Republic a new deal to lease 14 Gripen fighter planes. That's 10% cheaper than an offer made in the summer. The Czech Prime Minister Petr Nečas had previously said that his government could launch a new tender process for fighter jets if the two sides couldn't agree a deal. Mr. Vondra is stepping down at the end of the week. The Minister of Finance, Miroslav Kalousek, will on Wednesday present the Cabinet with information on which international airlines have expressed interest in taking over Czech Airlines, or ČSA. A spokesperson for the Ministry of Finance said on Tuesday that the information would only concern possible interest in taking part in the privatisation of the Czech national carrier. Price and other aspects would be addressed in a future phase of the process. A previous attempt to sell off ČSA in 2009 was unsuccessful. Archaeologists have found rare medieval artefacts in the courtyard of a building on Loretánská Street in the Prague Castle complex that should in future house the Václav Havel Library. The excavations have uncovered human bones, ceramics and coins from the era of Vratislav II of Bohemia. The protected building was purchased for the Havel Library by the wealthy businessman Zdeněk Bakala. Some conservationists have objected to the project, which has yet to receive a construction permit. And finally, a quick look at the weather. Forecasters say we can expect some sunny spells and some snow in the next couple of days, with temperatures reaching a maximum of 3 degrees Celsius. My name is Ian Willoughby. You'll find more news stories at radio.cz. But for now, that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. In today's programme, we take a closer look at the planned completion of the Temelín nuclear power plant, and we'll tell you about the Czech movie Alois Nebel that won the European Film Award for Best Animated Feature Film in Malta. Later on in Spotlight, we'll visit Bethlehem Chapel in Prague. All that coming away, so do please stay with us. The project to build two new reactors at South Bohemia's Temelín nuclear power plant represents a huge investment, but the massive project may never get off the ground, not least if the government reassesses issues surrounding the project's financing, as well as continuing uncertainty on the energy market. Jan Wellinger spoke to Michal Schnorber, an analyst for J&T, who explained why the expansion of Temelín under current conditions is far from ideal.
Very high risk because it's a very expensive investment for Czech utility and maybe also for Czech Republic. We are approximately in the middle of energy revolution. The situation is for European utility very difficult. European Union every month, every week, is coming with a new and new regulation. And it's very difficult to predict electricity prices. And now it looks that electricity price is going down and development of nuclear power station in South Bohemia is economically a problem for Czech and maybe for Czech Republic too.
Am I correct in assuming there that you mean that Czech, in protecting its investment, will want guarantees from the government in terms of energy prices or subsidies?
Yeah, exactly. The problem is the guarantee from Czech government because it's only one way how to save the investment of Czech. Czech is owned by Czech state, but we have to ask who will pay this money. The problem is that guarantee from the Czech state will have influence to accounts, companies in Czech Republic in the future, and people. It's the same problem as a boom of solar energy in Czech Republic. At this moment, the prices of baseload energy on energy exchange in Germany is around 45 euro per megawatt hour. If we will count on which price is Temelín will be new Temelín profitable, it's around 65, maybe 75 euro. The difference between these two prices will be guaranteed from the Czech government, and it's very difficult to say that this will pay Czech companies in the future. It will be a problem maybe for people too.
Because the consumer would also end up footing the bill,
partly. Normal consumer.
We know, we've seen repeatedly that the government is committed to nuclear power, projecting the role it will play over the next 30 years. Why do you think that the government at this point is still dedicated, given the risks involved?
Right now it's about political talks, about Temelín, because they are trying to create new investment for Czech industry. Our economy needs some positive impulse, but I think when the politics will count real numbers, then will be clear that investment to the new blocks to Temelín is especially a financial problem. And I hope that the decision to start with development of new blocks of Temelín will be
stopped or slowed down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe for 2 years, 3 years, maybe for 5 years. But right now the conditions are extremely negative for new investment in Europe. The best decision right now is stop the Temelín tender.
Michal Schnorber, an analyst for J&T, speaking there to Radio Prague's Jan Wellinger. Moving on now to cultural things, the historical drama Alois Nebel won the European Film Award for Best Animated Feature Film in Malta over the weekend. Its director, Tomáš Luňák, thus became the third Czech after Helena Třeštíková and Miloš Forman to take home one of the prestigious European Film Awards. Marša Valinsky has the story.
Tohle měl u sebe. Poznáváš někoho?
Ne.
Byla to stará fotka.
Alois Nebel brings to life not only the unusual lead character, a recluse middle-aged train dispatcher, but also the dreary and mysterious border regions of former Sudetenland. Based on a comic book trilogy by illustrator Jaromír Švédík, or Jaromír 99, and writer Jaroslav Rudiš, the film tells the story of a man lost in his childhood memories. Alois Nebel lives a quiet life in a small village in the Jeseniki Mountains until flashbacks of the post-war expulsion of German residents forces him to reopen the scars of those traumatic events almost 50 years later. In terms of historical gravity, Tomáš Luňák picked a heavy load for his first film, but the original idea for the comic strip that then evolved into a book trilogy and the film was born out of conversations between two friends in a Prague pub. Here is how Jaroslav Rudiš describes it.
Jaromír 99 and I created Alois Nebel 10 years ago at the Shot Out Eye pub in Žižkov, and we didn't expect this success at all. It actually started as a crazy underground punk project, or rather a dare between the two of us. I was telling Jaromír about my grandfather Alois, who was a train dispatcher near the border, just like Alois Nebel. And we never imagined that this story would become a sort of phenomenon and that he would get from the White Brook all the way to Malta.
Besides being the first Czech animated film to win the European Film Award, Alois Nebel is also the first Czech full-length movie to have used rotoscoping, a technique that basically creates a cartoon out of a normally shot film, allowed the creators to reinvent the look of Alois Nebel and the other characters, although most actors were similar in appearance to the way they appeared in the book. It is also black and white, just as the comic strip. The film's producer, Pavel Strnad, explains why the creators chose to use rotoscoping.
This technology is quite complicated and it hasn't been used that much in the past 20 years. The biggest problem is that you're basically making two films, but the result is just one film. Nevertheless, we chose to use this technique in order to preserve the visual style of the comic and at the same time utilize the possibilities that real actors can offer.
Because of the complex technology and the time it took to put it all together, the cost of the film was also quite high by Czech standards, around 2.5 million euros. When work on the production began 6 years ago, the state cinematography funding could offer a lot of support, as Nebel's director Tomáš Luňák explains.
This film is a product of a time when there was much more money in Czech cinematography, when there was a different philosophy, which was to give larger amounts to fewer films. We received a record amount of financial support, without which this film would not have been made.
Since its release in September 2011, Alois Nebel has appeared at festivals in Toronto and Venice and was even in the early stages of running for the Oscars. Some foreign critics have noted that the historical circumstances of the film, which are not all explained to the viewer, are hard to understand for an international audience, yet the visual ingenuity of the film seems to have charmed enough animation connoisseurs.
Marsha Volinsky with that report. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Now, in this edition of Spotlight, Dominik Jun visits Bethlehem Chapel in Prague, a monument to Jan Hus painstakingly rebuilt during the 1950s.
I'm standing in Prague 1 outside Bethlehem Chapel, and standing next to me is Mrs. Vlasta Urbánková, who is a guide who works here. So she's very kindly agreed to tell me a little bit about this chapel.
The chapel was built at the end of the 14th century. They started in 1391 and they finished in 1394. And since the beginning it was center of Reformation. Here.
Tell me a little bit about the Reformation, how this plays a role in the Reformation. It's to do with Jan Hus, right?
Yeah, soon after it was built, Jan Hus came here in 1402, and he was here up to 1412. He criticized the church. He disliked bad things in the church, corruption, selling indulgences.
Yeah. So this was designed to be an alternative movement, right? A sort of alternative religion, a new, cleaner, less corrupt religion.
Yes, and the building, it was four simple walls and flat wooden ceiling. They disliked the simplicity in the 16th century. And they constructed 15 huge pillars to carry the vault.
Right.
But the vault was too heavy for the structure. And in the 18th century, it was necessary to remove everything. There was no chapel in the 18th century.
So if we were standing here in the 18th century, what would we see?
Two warehouses only.
Perhaps we can go inside and continue our talk?
Yes, of course.
So we're just walking through the entrance here. So what's the architectural style here then? Is this is Gothic, right? Or is this...
It was Gothic. But it's special because it had flat ceiling. And now it looks as it looked in the past.
Right. So we've just entered the main hall, as it were. It's sort of half of a football-sized pitch.
It looks like a barn, but very, very big. Yeah,
yes.
Huge.
And I'm noticing that there are no religious symbols here. It's a chapel, but it looks more like a castle. You have this sort of medieval... This is a totally non-religious chapel.
Yes, but the decoration is new now. There were inscriptions. We don't know for certain, but in the past, when Jan Hus preached here.
Yes. So tell me about the reconstruction, about the rebuilding, because that happened in the 1950s. Right, under the communist regime, they decided to rebuild this place. Why?
They started thinking about reconstruction since the beginning of the 20th century. They started in 1950 and they finished in 1954. Only two remnants are from the old times when Jan Hus preached here. A few parts of the northern wall have survived, and this is one of the parts, the part with the inscription, and it was written by Jan Hus. It was in Latin. The chapel was built for Czech people to be able to listen Czech preachings here, but the inscription was in Latin. Church things were written in Latin. De sex erroribus, which means about six heresies of the church, in which he criticized the church. He put it on the wall when he had to leave. He came here in 1402 and had to leave in 1412.
Right.
Because he was cursed by the Pope and condemned from Prague.
But why would the communist regime of the 1950s be rebuilding a church? For a more detailed explanation, I turned to Czech Academy of Sciences historian Jaroslav Šebek.
The point wasn't to build a church, but rather to recreate a memorial to the Husite movement and a specific place to remember Jan Hus. The communist regime, with entirely pragmatic reasoning, used the Husite movement as a legitimizing embodiment of its own historical traditions. They sought to tie into this movement's emphasis on social equality, and rather paradoxically, the regime saw Hussites as the kind of first communists. And it also had a very positive view of Jan Hus too, although it completely chose to not view him as a Catholic priest, but rather as the leader of a nationalistic and revolutionary movement. Obviously, the effort to support Hussitism was also an effort to reignite national anti-Catholic tendencies which existed within the Protestant ideology.
And when the place reopened, when it was reconstructed in the 50s, what did the regime want it to be? Did they want it to be, once again, a Protestant church? Or?
Of course not. It belonged to the state, and from time to time it was opened, and they were, for example, graduation ceremonies and similar things.
So it's basically a sort of civil hall.
But it was closed for public. They opened it from time to time.
Right. So when did it open to the public properly?
At the beginning of 1990s.
So after the revolution.
After the revolution,
yes. So we're just taking a few steps into the center of the hall. We've got a big flat wooden roof above us, two pillars. It's beige colored, and you've got the classic Gothic window styles. And we're surrounded by lots and lots of chairs and a stage. And there are two wooden balconies as well. So it's presumably perfectly designed for public ceremonies and weddings happen here quite often,
yes,
right?
Yes, we have weddings here.
And today the place is perfect acoustically for musical concerts as well, right?
Yes, there are concerts.
Concerts here, right.
Yeah, there are concerts, there are immigration, graduation ceremonies.
And sometimes you get famous, you get politicians and people here as well coming for some like ceremonies and things like that as well.
From time to time,
from
yeah.
From time to time.
Too.
Right, we're just walking up some stairs, which are next to the main hall. And there are a few small rooms here. Here we have an exhibition.
I lived in this room. And now you can see an exhibition, which is first of all about Jan Hus here. And this is life of Jan Hus, Husinec, and Prachatice, where he studied first before he came to Prague.
And here we have in the center a glass case featuring some very old-looking documents. So what are these?
Yeah, it is a document of foundation of Charles University.
And Charles University and Bethlehem Chapel are...
They were connected, they were connected.
How?
They were connected by the ideas and by the person of Jan Hus, who studied and then after that who taught... at the university, and at last he became the rector, the head of the university in 1409.
Okay, well, Vlasta Urbánková, thank you very much for taking us to Bethlehem Chapel.
It's been a pleasure.
That edition of Spotlight by Dominic Yoon was first broadcast in July of this year. And I'm afraid it brings us to the end of today's programme. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Our programmes are there in text and sound, plus a lot of interesting information about the Czech Republic. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you. As always, this is Danielle Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today. Take care.